Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking. Gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Fan Junkies Radio, and it's going to be a good one. I'm your host, Jonathan Ragus. Alongside me, as always, my co-host and my partner in crime, Mike McShane. How you doing, Mike?
Very good, Jonathan. Busy weekend in sports, I'll tell you. Wow.
It was a wild and wacky one, that's for
it
sure.
It really was. I mean, I'm almost happy to have a nice, quiet Monday morning here, because I just feel like for the past 3 days, it's been nonstop with all of the things I've had on my agenda.
Well, I hear you, man. It's, we're getting out to a slow start here today, unfortunately, coming off this long and tiring weekend.
Yep.
But, before we do anything, I just have to give a shout-out to my nephew, Christian, who turned 10 years old this weekend.
Oh, there you go.
So I promised him I'd give him a little shout-out here on Fan Junkies Radio today. So there you go, buddy. Happy birthday.
That's cool.
Yeah, 10 years old, man. It feels like he was just born yesterday. It's crazy.
Oh.
Time sure does fly.
You're not kidding. I can speak to
that. Well, you know that, right?
I can speak to that one for sure, yep.
You know about that stuff, don't you, buddy?
Yeah, I do.
You know what? We have a great show today. Joining us in just a couple of minutes is author Russ Cohen, who has a new book out called The Winter Classic, NHL Savior. We're going to talk to Russ about that book, maybe even about his last book, 100 Ranger Greats, and definitely we're going to talk NHL Lockout with Russ. Longtime friend of mine, and, glad to have him on. We were supposed to have him on, last month?
Oh, yeah, it was a little while ago, and then we had some issues.
We had some issues, unfortunately, so it's definitely great to get him all rescheduled and have him on today. We're definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah, and this is it's a great book for hockey fans. I started reading some of it in the past couple of days, and wonderful time. I mean, you got the holidays coming. Good holiday pickup for some of your hockey fans out there.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? If you have a legit hockey fan in your family, or you even are one and want to buy yourself a gift, definitely check out Russ's book. I was reading some of it this weekend. Unfortunately, I couldn't read all of it.
Right.
But want to thank Russ for sending out some copies of that.
Yep.
It's a great book. But you know what? Let's get to Russ now so we can talk about it.
Absolutely.
All right. Great. So joining us now is author Russ Cohen. Russ, how you doing, buddy?
Good, John. How are you?
We're doing real good, man. Thanks for coming back on the air. So, it's nice to get you back on. So,
thanks for being with us, Russ.
Yep, no problem, Mike.
So, let's talk about your new book here, right from the start. The Winter Classic, The NHL Savior. So, basically, tell our listeners what gave you the idea to write this book and what it's about.
Well, back in the day, in 2003, I went to the Heritage Classic. I was sort of 3 years into my writing career and thought it was cool that I could get out there and experience that and really sort of like the outdoor hockey experience. And then when I got wind that the NHL was going to have an outdoor game, I went and got credentialed for that, and we trucked up to Buffalo, and we found that to be such a good experience, and I kept going back every year. And I think by the fourth one, we decided, hey, me and Mike Del Tufo, because we cover a lot of Flyers games together and some other NHL events, and we decided let's do this book because – these outdoor games are like nothing else that the NHL puts on. And that's not a slight on the NHL's regular season. It's just, there's just a lot of variables to these outdoor games. And even though they canceled the one this year, we felt like there's enough of a history of the other ones where there's plenty of fans of other teams and just fans of the Winter Classic in general that might want to know more about it. And we could always update it in the future. So it's just one of those things where we look at these games as complete anomalies. Everyone is different, and they're just a lot of fun, and players sort of look at them in a special way too. If you read the foreword by Ty Conklin, he pretty much lets you know that, and that's the beauty of it, I think.
Russ, let me ask you, because I've not attended one. I wish I could have. I wish I had been down to the one down there at Citizens Bank Park, because, of course, that's right here in my locale. However, I have watched every single one that's been on television. Now, you say that this particular event is like no other event that the NHL puts on. Not having been to one of these myself personally, tell me, what is it, you know, is it one thing or is there a couple of things that has you saying, boy, this is just different, this is special, this is so unique? What is it?
Well, getting past the first one, which didn't have the same kind of pomp and circumstance and fanfare that future ones were to have, they have a lot of things going on outdoors. They have, basically, they'll have retailers there. They'll have rinks for kids. So they have an outdoor festival. So that's fun in and of itself. The practices are very unusual. And I go to a fair amount of hockey practices, but, you know, they're all pretty normal unless it's during the playoffs or you think someone's injured or it's the beginning of the year. Otherwise, you know, practice is practice. But these practices are entirely different. Definitely weird things happen. The weather changes. Guys are wearing eye black. They're not wearing eye black. They're wearing hats. They're not wearing hats. They're all of a sudden they're skating with their family. All of a sudden, you know, just all kinds of different things happen at different times. So you have that. And then you actually have the game, and sometimes you even, you know, run into the talent that they have at the game, and you talk to those guys, people like James Taylor and such. So I just it is amazing people that you could run into. You know, I have a part where I ran into Duff Goldman, and I certainly don't travel in the same circles as him, even though he's a hockey fan. You know, he's out there, you know, on the Food Network, and I'm, you know, covering sports. So
yeah.
But it was fun, and those kinds of things I find very interesting, and just then the games themselves, they always have little differences based on the venue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? You've been to, more than I've been to, and more of Mike's have been to. From writing this book and just, you know, going over your thought process and everything, which to you was the Winter Classic where you said to yourself, wow, this is something really special. This is something that the NHL can run with this for so many years.
Well, I think the first one gave me the thought process that they could do this again and do it bigger and better because, you know, the first one was sort of a tester. Let's see how it tests out in the U.S. market. Let's see if it'll work on TV. Let's see if fans will like it. Let's see if people will show up. I think all of those questions were being asked by the league. And even Gary Bettman, you know, we have quotes in there. He certainly downplayed it, which the NHL never downplays anything they put on. But they certainly downplayed it at the beginning because they really didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So you get there, and there wasn't a lot of pomp and circumstance. And I remember calling into XM because they wanted a full report for me on what was going on. And I remember walking through the parking lot saying, you know, it looks like a regular hockey game, except it's in a football stadium. And there was maybe one or two concession stands, nothing big. And so you didn't have that full feel yet. But then when we started walking through the stadium, they were testing the pyrotechnics and we were right there and we felt the heat from it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that would ever happen again because they probably would just kick us out when they were doing things like that. but back then, it's just one of those things where they just were doing it. So all those things sort of make it a little different. And then even the press box, we were like, wow, this is pretty great because, you know, being in a football stadium, the vantage point was certainly interesting. And you know, there was buffalo wings in the press box being served because you're in Buffalo, and we were sort of giggling about that.
Yeah.
And you know, and as the game went on, you got the feel that, hey, this is definitely different. And I grew up on Long Island, so there was only two rinks on the island, and one when I was a little kid and then two later on. So I did a fair amount of ice skating, but I didn't play ice hockey because you really had to travel, and I had to just be able to get to whatever sports I can get to because both parents worked. But we did have a little rink down the block, a kid did.
Mm-hmm.
His parents built like a half rink. And so we used to fool around on that quite a bit. And so everybody has that in them. Even if you're in a place like Long Island or if you're a place in Nova Scotia, everybody has sort of experienced outdoor pond hockey or something to that degree where they could say, hey, you know, I can relate to this. And it's a one-time emotional investment. If you're not a hockey fan, you don't have to watch the whole season. You can just watch this game.
Yep. You're right on with that. I did play hockey. I played ice hockey when I was a kid. And, yes, I did play on outdoor frozen ponds. And you're absolutely right. There's nothing like that. There's just something so unique. And it, you know, when you got the guys together and you run out and you're going to go skate on the frozen pond, I mean, there was just a different level of excitement versus when you actually went in and played in a rink, you know, because, of course, we did both. You know, we would play in rinks, but then on those special occasions where it would be cold enough that you've got a frozen pond next door to you or down the street from you and you got everybody together and you're out playing a game. There is something completely different about it. Russ, you refer to the Classic as NHL Savior.
Mm-hmm.
Go into a little bit about what your reference is to that. I mean, when you're talking about something being a savior, it's almost as if the NHL needed to be saved. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, sure, and I think they did. I think coming out of that last lockout, that 2004-2005 lockout, they probably had a meeting and said, what can we do? And I don't know that this happened. I'm just, you know, guessing. But they probably had a meeting saying, what can we do to sort of get things back on track and maybe even build future events? And they certainly put on the Heritage Classic, and then it was sort of buried for a little while. And I think the planning started happening for that outdoor game, because I know they had talked about it for years before, and we know there was that game in Vegas, and if you watch that on film, it's nothing like what they put on now. It actually, I'm not even sure you get a clean look at the game, because everything seems to be a little blurry, and the ice wasn't great, and all those things. So I think what they decided was, hey, we know that coming out of this lockout, that last lockout, that we need a marquee event. And the All-Star Game, while it's still around and I still cover them, has lost a little luster. We all know that. And every sports All-Star Game has. So,
absolutely.
So they've tried to all breathe life into that, but then they came up with the idea of this, no doubt. And this got them, I think, got them the NBC deal. And I think after NBC witnessed how great this first one was with the snow, with everything else, HD television had just really come into play for most households. I think that was the clincher right there. I think that was the selling point. I think that was the, wow, now we've got something else we could really market here.
So let me ask you this. Sorry, Mike.
That's right, go ahead.
You know, touching on the All-Star Game and how much, you know, of pizzazz that it has lost over the years, which we all know it definitely has. It hasn't been exciting for a long time now. Do you think ultimately that the NHL could possibly ever do away with the All-Star Game, or just have some kind of a huge weekend where the All-Star Game is played after or even before Winter Classic?
I think they could do something, and they certainly were planning to have this year's, and I was in Columbus a few months ago and saw the banners, and so they certainly were planning on this year's. But I think if it were me, and of course they don't consult me, but if it were me, I think they should have it for as the same weekend as the Winter Classic. I think that would make sense. And I'm not sure – I wouldn't even make one of the outdoor games an All-Star game just to sort of re-kickstart it. But if nothing else, I would have it at the same weekend. You might as well, and just have it be entirely different so people can look at that and say, wow, this was really something, and sort of, you know, give it that little extra kickstart that I think it needs.
Well, yeah, you know what? If you do the whole alumni game with the, you know, with the All-Star Skills Competition on a Saturday, you know, I it could definitely kickstart, and it definitely needs to be kickstarted because it's been terrible the last few years.
Yeah, I think it would be a good thing. I'm definitely not against it. The one thing that I learned when I got in some meetings and such for the Winter Classic, and the NHL would certainly tell us what they were doing and let them ask them a lot of questions and such. Nothing is out of bounds for a Winter Classic. And I think that's also the beauty of it, because right now we sort of look at it like, okay, whose baseball stadium or football stadium is it going to be in next? But it doesn't have to be in that next.
Huh. Right. This is an economic giant for these cities that get to host this thing, which is the only thing that I would think might come into play with regard to throwing, say, the All-Star Game into the mix, is because when you're having two different events, you essentially can have two different cities benefit economically from it. I don't know if they go that far, though, Mike.
I know the one thing the NHL seemed to frown upon, which I think was a logistics thing, was basically that they can't have two events like this in two cities within even a week of each other. It just would cause, they feel like it would probably cause too much chaos because it's just too much to keep an eye on. That's why even with the Heritage Classic, we've only seen one other one, because I don't even think they feel like they could hold a Heritage Classic and a Winter Classic every year either.
Right, right. Okay.
Why is that? Do you think it would just take the excitement out of the Winter Classic if they did a Heritage Classic before that? Or
no, I think it's just there's a big cost factor. There's only so many of those machines that they have that actually set the, you know, the ice up and everything else.
Yeah.
And so I think, and there's only a limited amount of markets in Canada compared to the U.S.
Right.
And I think
that's true.
So you don't want to basically waste those too quickly, I think. I think that's a factor.
Now,
makes sense.
I did not get to Chapter 8, Russ. But I see it is the shortest chapter there.
Really?
Chapter 8, for the listeners who don't have the book right in front of them, Chapter 8 is on the 2013 Winter Classic preview. Obviously, at the time that you went to press on this, you knew there was not going to be a Winter Classic this year. I apologize because I haven't gotten to Chapter 8.
Yes. We have just made that last change, and 8 does say actually the 2014, even though it does say the 2013 in the contents, and I think we just fixed that because we had to make a last-minute change with that. So, yeah, we had to make that decision. We made that decision, and that's when we, you know, made the decision to move forward with the book too. But, yes, it's definitely the shortest chapter, and for good reason. But there is some good stuff in there. But I got to tell you, I got to let my dog out for a sec. Give me 10 seconds. Sorry.
Yep.
No problem. Take your time. Russ is like me, man. He's a big animal lover.
We've both been there, haven't we? I mean,
Absolutely. Yeah, we've heard my dog and my mascot already barking on there. So.
Yep.
It always happens, man. It's great times, you know. Makes for entertaining radio. Absolutely.
Yep.
Sorry, thought I was good, but I wasn't. But anyhow, it's just one of those things. But we did have material on it.
Yeah.
So we felt like we should use it because they're going to have it. It's just a matter of what year. And I thought some of the quotes were pretty worthy. Mike Ilitch is a really great down-to-earth kind of millionaire owner.
Yeah.
And I had a chance to interview him on the ice after the Red Wings won the Stanley Cup in Pittsburgh and was very taken with the guy because just the humility of him, just the, like I said, just the regular guy in him. So when you see some of the quotes that he had pre-Winter Classic, you know, he was just like any fan being very excited that it was coming to his city.
Mm-hmm.
So we felt like we should leave that excitement in there. There was some funny stuff in there, and it is eventually going to go to Detroit. So why not?
Well,
it's definitely going to get there. You know, like we talked about earlier, too, you know, the excitement over it, not only just for the players, because to them it's getting back to what they know and getting back to basics with pond hockey. But
yeah,
to have this event in your city is just – it's huge.
Yeah, it was going to the big house, right, to Michigan.
Yeah, it was going to be in the big house, and then a lot of the other games were going to be at Comerica.
Yeah.
So, and the thing is – and there's a big reason why, let's say, if the season started – January 1st, it couldn't start with the Winter Classic. It wasn't just about the Winter Classic. It's also about the five or six other games that go that same weekend. How could the OHL make a last-minute decision? How can high schools make a last-minute decision? How can the AHL make a last-minute decision?
Right.
So that's where the NHL was sort of saying, yeah, you know, we can't hold up these other leagues because they were all going to play games too.
Yeah, right.
Mm. Well, go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, talk to us now, though, Russ, about the impact of the fact that we're not going to have one this year in 2013. Is there going to be an impact, or is it just, you know, hey, it's all part of the lockout issue, and when the teams come back, everything will be fine. The Winter Classic will be what it was before.
No, I think the Winter Classic will be what it was before, but I think it's a huge economic impact and a huge loss to both sides because, as people will find out in the book, there's some numbers and – the NHL was one of the best sellers on Cyber Monday last year.
Yeah.
It probably had a lot to do with the Flyers and Rangers. It had a lot to do with, you know, the Winter Classic. But I'm pretty sure when we go back and look how the NHL did in selling merchandise this year on Cyber Monday, I'm sure they're not even a blip on the map.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
You know, and that's where I think both sides are going to lose a little bit. But once they start it up again, the fans will be all about it. I don't think there's going to be an issue. I don't think and to be very honest, I know people that are holding the tickets because they said, hey, you know, you could send them back in. We'll give you a full refund, including, you know, the fees, or you could just hold it for the next one, and people are holding it for the next one.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, why would you even want to miss that, you know? Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, so you're willing to just leave it there. I mean, you know, hey, it's going to happen. I made this investment. I don't want to lose my seat.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what Mike and I have been talking about for quite a few weeks now since the lockout began, is that, you know, the fans are going to come back, you know. I'm sure they're not making the sales that they want to now, whether it's on NHL.com or whatever else. But when this comes back, I mean, the fans are going to jump right back into it, and the excitement over the Winter Classic is just going to start again like it wasn't even missed.
Right. I think the big issue is instead of $3.3 billion, they probably will only be cutting up $2 billion to start, because they will have a loss at the beginning, and it will take a little while for some to come back. And but I think there's a lot of misnomers. I've been covering the lockout the entire time, and I hate it. Believe me, I hate it. Yeah. And I'm staying up with it, and I know way too much about it. And there are people that are anti-owner, there are people that are anti-player, and I'm really believe it's a 50-50 thing. And time that you might see one side making a PR push or the other side, in the end, the players have already lost. And Donald Fehr would never tell them that, but it's true, because they were worried about that $1.3 billion that over time was just going to get pocketed by the owners. And as the weeks went on and the weeks went on and the weeks went on and there were no games, they already lost more than that.
Yeah.
So now you might lose a year off a player's career, which Ted Lindsay made a great point the other day of saying, and I had been trying to say it all along, there is something at that year back. And sometimes that year is the last year of your career. Sometimes that year is the year you could have broken out and really done something, and now maybe when you come back, you're not the same player for a year because you didn't get to practice and play like the top maybe 5% are overseas to keep your skills sharp. So I think that's all going to play into it. And I think at the end of the day, players have to look at this, and they just got a $10,000 stipend, which I think if we all look at that, thought they would get a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And what's $10,000 going to do for a hockey player in December? It's not going to do a lot.
Yeah.
So I think we may see a weakening there, but I still, right now, you know, I've soured to the point where I think it's 75-25, we don't see a season.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but from what you're saying there, I'm getting a sense that perhaps maybe you're thinking the NHLPA should have perhaps maybe come down a bit.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, you're not putting words in my mouth. I think Donald Fehr does his job really well. I wrote a baseball book, Strike Three. There's a lot of stuff about Donald Fehr in it because the baseball player featured in that book had a lot of dealings with the MLBPA. And so we did a lot of writing about Donald Fehr. And actually, so I respect the work that Donald Fehr does, but I think both sides at some point underestimated the other side to the point where we are now. And I think early on, Donald Fehr, I think, underestimated the NHL, thinking, well, look what the NBA did, look what the NFL did, they'll follow suit and they'll basically come around right around the same time, where clearly they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the NHL thought, well, at some point, players are going to want to play so badly that they will come back, and essentially Donald Fehr will have lost the battle, and they have not.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Donald Fehr right now is at the point of no return. He'll never tell you that. He's a cool customer. He's great at relating to guys, but as you saw what Ted Lindsay said, and I had heard pretty much whispers about this, it's not like they get all 700 players voting every time something happens. And so I'm sure they have quite a underbelly of players that really want to get this done, regardless of how much they think they've made off this deal or not. because they want to get back to playing. Because let's face it, we know when they're back playing, salaries are up. Salaries were up 75% for them in the last year of that CBA. Now, I understand when some fans say, well, why would they want to give up their 57%? Besides, we also should point out that 57% is before expenses. So it's basically it's a gross, it's not a net.
Right.
So I think that's a point. But I think also the players knew with a big grin, hey, we're the only league with 57%.
Right.
Why are we going to give that up? Meanwhile, no other league does that, right? So there was no way the NHL was going to continue on with that. And I think they knew that. So I think that became a little bit of a bone of contention. But I think an important factor here that people sort of overlook, players don't pay for expenses. They don't pay for hotels. They don't pay for flights. They even get meal money, which I'm not sure they need. But they get all of these things taken care of them by the owners, yet how could they be equal partners?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they can never be equal partners. And it's always the owners' league. And at the end of the day, there'll never be a players' league. We've seen what happens when the players try to organize things and it never works out.
No.
The WHA was close. The KHL is the next closest thing. And none of them ever resemble the NHL. And there's a reason for that. So at some point, you have to get what you can get and say, all right, now I've got to cut my losses. Because if they just let a season go by, then you're really in the unknown. Because we're into our third lockout with this regime, or fourth. Was it the fourth?
The third. But there was a strike.
There was a strike. That's where my head was at. Right. So the third lockout with this regime. And we don't know. We don't know what will happen when you try and start there from scratch. Now, I'll tell you, if they decertify, I don't believe the NHL will crumble like the other leagues did when their PAs started talking decertification and even filed for decertification. Because the thing about that is those other leagues never went through with it. They filed papers. It got to a certain point, and then they basically made a deal because the other leagues didn't want it to get to that.
Right.
I think at this point the NHL will let it get to that. And if it does, the players lose again because then everybody's a free agent.
I would agree. I think it would be the worst thing in the world the NHLPA could do.
It would be because everybody would be a free agent. Fans would then be very incensed because now a Ranger fan wouldn't have Henrik Lundqvist necessarily as their goalie. You don't know who your goalie would be.
Right.
Yeah. Basically, nobody is a Ranger at that point. You have all that to deal with. Donald Fehr would be out, by the way.
Yes.
He'd automatically be out. He'd have to get voted back in. So you don't know if that would happen.
Yeah.
And Donald Fehr at that point might just say, okay, I've taken this as far as I could take it and walk away, and then they'd have to get somebody else anyhow. So I think it's a more of a threatening maneuver on their part.
Yeah,
and I think Bill Daly has played it correctly by saying, listen, if you do it, the season's over. Let's just say that, right, because we see how things drag on in court, right?
Yeah.
So we know the season would be over. But then what I don't think fans realize is, not only would this not kickstart the season right away, because I don't think the NHL is going to blink at the threat, but then it could run into next season, and maybe you only get a half season out of next season.
Well, and you're bringing me to the next point that I wanted to throw at you, Russ, and that is, what's it going to take to break this stalemate? Is it going to be some players stepping forward and saying, okay, enough is enough, and they start applying pressure to, say, somebody like Donald Fehr?
Yeah, I think it's going to take some of that, and I think maybe some of that has already begun, and that's why there's this meeting without Fehr and Bettman. And to me, it's an interesting point because it's basically telling me both sides realize these two guys can't meet anymore. It's just not going to work out. Now, it's not contentious like it was with Goodnow. It's not like that. Donald Fehr doesn't ever get like that with anybody, but it's just they're not getting anywhere, right? So they realize, okay, having these guys in the room, you can't get anywhere. But I think the other issue is it's still hard. It's sort of like if you wanted something out of your father and you went to your mother and you said, hey, Ma, can you get Dad to do this? Well, you know, so they go to this meeting. They still have to go back to the other two guys to get it done, right?
Right.
So it's not a guarantee of anything. Maybe it'll be an exchange of new ideas. I think Vinick from Tampa is great that he's in there because he's really the only small market guy in there. So I think that's a big thing. And I know people were pushing for James Dolan to be in there. Me personally, I'm not sure he would have gotten anything done. So I think that's why at the end of the day he's not in there. Because, again, the Rangers make more money than they're one of the top three teams in the league.
Yeah.
So I think players would look at that and still not be thrilled that he's in there. Maybe some Rangers would be thrilled, but I think otherwise they wouldn't be. So I think they've tried to at least strategically do this. But I think the one thing you could look at, if you ever want to get a clue as to how you think a session's going to go, and it's unfortunate because I've had two bad predictions about when this would end already, so don't think I've got it figured out, because I don't.
Yeah, we're not going to put money in your word now. So
that's
don't.
All right. Jonathan and I make bad picks, too. Don't worry about it, Russ.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
But what I'm saying is, there is a clue, though, and I realized the meetings before Thanksgiving, there was no way there was ever going to be an agreement, because I could look at who the PA sent, and they were sending, like, second-year players, third-year players. When those guys are sent, it's nothing serious. They're sending them for just the experience of doing this so they could be a part of the process. You have to have the Craig Adamses of the world, guys that are actually really lawyers in real life practically now because they're educated and they're a year away from ending their career. It's those guys. When those guys are going for the PA, then that's when you know they're serious, because mm-hmm. when a second, third-year player is going, they don't have the same knowledge. They don't have the same anything that these other veterans do and some of these guys that are really knowledgeable.
Yeah, well, that's why Trevor Linden was such a huge part of the last one.
Correct.
You know, that's why, you know, with that whole divide that he created, which got rid of Bob Gooden now, you know, it's going to take somebody to step up and try to be that next Trevor Linden now.
But I will tell you, I think the big mistake was when they got rid of Paul Kelly.
Yeah.
Because Paul Kelly was able to get things done with the NHL.
Yeah.
And even though the players may not get the same deal with a Paul Kelly, they would have had labor peace. And
yeah,
I think,
but you know what? These players aren't suffering either way. You know?
No.
That's the thing.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
still
that's
making,
not true.
Well,
that's not true.
They're still making out good.
They still make out good when they're getting paid. If you're on your entry-level deal, and let's say you did buy a house and you have a kid and everything else, and you've sort of lived high on the hog,
yeah.
you might be sweating it out. Or
yeah.
Or if you're one of those guys who's a free agent every year who's only getting $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, I say only because we never make that.
Yeah, but, I was going to say, only, come on.
But still, you know, you start looking at that depending on how high on the hog they live.
Right.
I think there's a fair amount of them sweating it out, to be honest. And I think that's why when you see guys like Crosby, and if none of those guys are ever taking part in these meetings, I don't think it'll ever get done. And that's why when players like Nash, the guys who make the big money, are all off overseas playing, well, that's basically telling me, if you get it done, you get it done. If not, I'm still getting paid. And I'm not holding it against them, but I'm just saying that you're not part of the process, where maybe a guy like Brad Richards, who got paid $22 million in a calendar year, is still here, at least trying to help get it done.
Nah.
And that's the other part you got to remember too, guys. Owners, people could say, fans can say, oh, we hate the owners, we hate the owners, we hate the – you know, the players don't hate them that much, because a lot of them got signing bonuses that never existed within the last 3 years, knowing that this could happen. And so
yeah.
some guys got anywhere from $2 million to someone like Brad Richards, who got $20-something million in 1 year to sort of tide them over.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
No, this is a great point, you know. But you know what? Let me ask you this. Out of all the people who are on the negotiating committee for the NHLPA, so you're basically saying it's going to take a guy like a Greg Adams to really
Adams,
step
yeah.
up
yeah.
and play the role like a Trevor Linden played.
Yeah. Yeah. And
or like a Marty Biron. So you're saying basically a seasoned vet
yeah.
who knows what they're doing and what they're talking about.
No question about it. It's
okay.
the same thing with baseball, where a guy like Tom Glavin was sort of in the lead there for – the 94 strike. It's the same thing. You have to have a guy like that. And Craig Adams, I'm going to see if I can look up what his degree is, but he might have a law degree. But yeah, he's Harvard University. So, you know, but he's a guy who went to class. When you go to Harvard, you actually go. And, you know, unless you're Louis LeBlanc and you're out in a year. But, you know, he's a smart kid, too. So he went when he was there. I mean, he's actually a brilliant kid. He just, you know, he went to the CHL after that. But, yeah, a guy like Craig Adams we could be looking at the next head of the PA and a guy like him.
Yeah.
And so I think he's a key guy to have in there, because he is a smart guy. He knows the league. He is educated to the point where he understands a lot of this. And, obviously, he's been in on a lot of these.
Yeah, and it would be a great thing to have a legit player being the head of everything one day, you know? So these guys know
like
that.
Like Ted Lindsay was back in his day, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
I think
you
that's
know,
the...
You just have this, you know, just one lawyer who doesn't know where these players are coming from being the head of the committee, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's always... I've always kind of felt that Donald Fehr was kind of a hired gun to begin with.
Well, he is. And the worst thing that Donald Fehr does is whispers in your ear, I can get you more.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, he reminds me of every despicable agent that's out there.
Well, I wouldn't say – see, I can't use despicable only because he's there to do a job. If you hire him to do that job, he's going to do it. You may hate the way he goes about doing it. You may hate the fact that you lost a year, year and a half until it got done. But he's going to get it. You know, he's going to make you money just to what degree. So it's sort of like you have to decide whether that was a good idea after the fact. But he's not a despicable guy. Like, if you have a conversation with him, he is a very normal guy. We, you know, he came into a – I was in a meeting with Donald Fehr, and you come out of there saying, hey, he's an impressive guy. Whether you like him or not, it's another story, you know.
I certainly don't mean it in a personal respect. I guess I mean it more from the standpoint of just their business practice. You know what I'm saying? That's where I guess I'm coming from.
Well,
yeah,
let me just curious before we let you go, though. Tomorrow's meeting with the players – do you think anything good is going to come out of this? Was this the right move to go with?
I don't think anything immediate comes out of it. Mm. Could something a little more long-term come out of it? Perhaps.
Yeah, just like a little glimmer of hope or something? Or, you know.
We've had a lot
little,
of those, Jonathan.
Yeah.
It's a real little glimmer, but I'll tell you that they have to get this wrapped up before the Christmas break where, you know, clearly things are going to stop to a grinding halt. And if they don't have an agreement in place by then, I don't think we have a season. So I think this is a little glimmer where they're at least sort of changing things up. I knew when they had the mediator there, that would be nothing. And it actually, I would have to say, that turned out to be less than what I thought it would be.
it was a complete joke.
Everybody was disappointed by that. I mean, I think everybody was thinking, oh, this might be the way to go.
Well, I knew it wasn't going to end it because it wasn't binding arbitration. I knew that much. But I didn't count on the fact that it would end so quickly with so little results.
Exactly.
I thought maybe you get something out of it, a little cracker, and you got nothing. I mean, it was just like they just shrugged their shoulders and left the room.
It's basically
just
what everybody knew already. Listen, these guys can't meet anymore. That's it. It's done.
I got the impression that they almost thumbed their nose at him.
Yeah. I think it comes down to this, and I think it's a situation where players have to decide – can they live with the offer that's on the table if the NHL doesn't budge? And I think at the end of the day, they should. And it's not like I'm trying to spend their money for them or anything else, but I think at the end of the day, if they looked in the mirror and said, what else would I be doing if I wasn't playing for the NHL? I think then they would have a very scary life because I think 5% of these guys would actually do well in the corporate world or do something, and maybe another 5% would play overseas, and everybody else would be out of work.
Oh, yeah. These guys would be lost.
Yep.
No doubt about it.
They'd be lost, and I think they need to take that into consideration.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, Russ, listen.
How's the book doing, Russ, real quick?
It's doing well, actually. It's doing really well. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and it should be coming out in stores soon. And so far, so good.
I was just going to ask you that to let everybody know where they can buy it. So
those are the main places, and so far so good, and we're just starting to gear up for some press and everything else. So you guys are right on the cusp of it, and I appreciate it.
Well, there you go. That's Jonathan and I. We're always ahead of the curve.
Yeah, we'll definitely be plugging it away for you here, man. So
I've been saying, hey, good pre-Christmas sort of thing, right?
Yep, definitely is, and what we're finding is, there was some worry when we put it out, hey, will people just not care about hockey anymore? And what we're finding is the actual opposite, where people are dying for anything hockey.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I can see that.
Well, Russ, thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to talk to us about the NHL lockout and, of course, your new book, The Winter Classic, The NHL Savior. And hopefully after the book is out there, we can get you back on, hopefully when the season starts.
Absolutely.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Mike. And my last comment for you is, I don't know if it's 100% that the Greg McElroy era started yet either, and you guys could chat about that.
Thanks, man. Come on, it's breaking my heart already, and that's what we're going to get to right now. So,
all right. Take care, guys.
Take care, bro. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, goodbye.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Yeah. You know, everybody's got to throw in those little Jets things there.
Well, listen, that was right at you, dude.
Well, of course. Well, you know, Russ is a Jets fan as well, so.
I know he is.
You know, he feels the pain. So, but you know what? Let's get into football here. We got about 20 minutes left in this show. It was great to have Russ on. A lot of information.
Yeah, very knowledgeable.
And a lot of listeners didn't know, so that's always great to have somebody on to really explain it to people.
Exactly. Very, very knowledgeable on the topic, and that's why I think, you know, at least I wanted to keep him on for a little bit longer, was to get to some of his, you know, pick his brain a little bit, because it's obvious he follows this thing very, very closely.
Absolutely. Well, we'll definitely get him back on. Hopefully by the time we do, the NHL season will be on. If not, we'll have him either way, because like he said, people are still dying for anything NHL. So,
yep.
All right, well, let's talk some football, Mike. We had some wacky wins yesterday and some upsets.
Did.
Upset number one we're going to go with here, St. Louis Rams defeating the 49ers 16-13. And during the game, one of the first things I sent out to you was, starting Colin Kaepernick was really smart over your starting quarterback, Alex Smith.
Well, you know, I kind of said it for a good portion of the week. In fact, let me back it up. I didn't say it. I questioned it. I questioned it to everybody that is knowledgeable in football. Is this the right thing to be doing? You got a quarterback in Alex Smith. He's ranked number 5 in the NFL. Really? You're going to hand it to a guy who's, quote-unquote, got the hot hand for 2 games, 3 games?
Well,
I don't know. I think it showed yesterday. There were a lot of really, really bad plays Kaepernick had yesterday. A lot of really just unwise throws and possessions that he had.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because, I mean, you know what? The Rams, they just tied the 49ers not too many weeks ago.
Correct. And this one almost went to a tie.
It really could. And that would have been funny. I'm sorry, but that would have been, I was hoping it would have been, because that would have been such an interesting trivia for down the line.
You're not kidding.
You know, it's something to watch. But listen, Colin Kaepernick wasn't terrible yesterday.
No, he wasn't.
He just wasn't. To me, if you have a quarterback that's going to rush for 84 yards, you're barely going to win or not going to win at all.
Well, I've said that repeatedly, not only about Kaepernick, but about others. I've said that, too, about RG3. I don't think you can have your quarterback being your leading rusher.
Yeah. Right now, I agree with what RG3 is doing, and I've said that because he doesn't have the targets to throw to. But let me tell you something. RG3, he's got a gun.
Yes.
And can that kid throw? And I'm talking about accuracy, laser-type passes, and downfield. Man, he's going to be good. But I don't see that with Colin Kaepernick.
Well, I don't know. I've seen him throw. I've seen him throw.
He can throw, but let me tell you, he doesn't have an arm like an RG3.
Well, maybe not. His longest yesterday was 30 yards, Kaepernick's was, to Michael Crabtree. The difference between what you're looking at on San Fran and what you're looking at, as you just pointed out, Jonathan, over on the Washington Redskins, is the difference, I believe, in the quote-unquote weapons. I think San Fran's got far, far more of them.
Let me tell you, man. You have RG3 and the 49ers?
Oh, yeah.
Forget about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Crabtree, Moss, Manningham, Davis, Ginn, Gore. I mean, the options that are there for a guy like RG3 would be insane. Or even Andrew Luck.
But I think the point is well taken, that when you've got Kaepernick beating Gore on the rushing board, something's wrong with the picture here. Something's wrong with the play calling.
Oh, well, absolutely. And let me tell you, I'm not saying that Alex Smith is a tremendous quarterback, because he's not.
I agree.
He's an average, maybe a little bit better than that, because he's starting to grow into his own this year. But to sit him for Colin Kaepernick right now, I mean, yes, you're 8-3-1. Well, you were 8-2-1 yesterday.
Right.
You're 8-3-1 today. But let me tell you, you just gained a loss by doing what you did.
Well, and that was my question on Thursday night on 5 Minutes at the Frat House. My question was, okay, you're 8-2-1 going into this game. If Kaepernick loses, who's your quarterback next week? You're probably going to Alex Smith, in which case now Harbaugh has gone and created himself a quarterback controversy that did not need to be there.
And listen, let me tell you, that fumble that Kaepernick lost.
Absolutely.
That was gross. It was awful.
It was so bad. That play looked so bad.
It was, I think, about 30 feet over the guy's head.
Honest to God. I mean, that was something you would see in a high school play. Seriously.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, you know, over on the other side, you know, Bradford. You know, I pointed it out to Sidekick here, who is our frat house resident Rams fan.
Yeah.
Nothing's taken away from him. Listen, I made the point yesterday. I believe that two big teams you're going to see the greatest improvement from next season, will be the Miami Dolphins and will be the St. Louis Rams. However, I said to Sidekick yesterday, some of it may be pointed directly at Bradford, because you got to start questioning now, with this being his third year in the league, is this the guy you're going to build this team with?
Well, listen, I'm you know what? To me, he's got no weapons. He's never had any weapons. Besides Danny Amendola, who can't stay healthy and on the field.
Jackson?
What happened? Jackson, come on, man. Jackson's aging. He's done. I'm sorry. You know, 48 yards yesterday, just a few measly yards the week before. He has these glimmers of hope here and there sometimes where he looks like the Steven Jackson of old. But look at the wide receiving and the tight end line. They really don't have anybody. I mean, they have a couple of young guys, but that's about it.
I think that Fisher went in there this year to address the defense. And
absolutely.
And
now
he has done.
Look at their offense.
Yeah, that he has done. And I think he's done a good job in addressing the Rams defense. I think next year now, and that's why I say that I believe next year, this is when you're going to see the Rams start to you're really going to start to see the improvement. I think next year will be the year that you're going to start to see Fisher address the offensive side of the ball.
Oh.
And that is why I said to Sidekick, I think at that point then, you might start to see questions being raised about Bradford.
Absolutely. Well, we'll figure it out. Jeff Fisher was the best thing that they ever did.
I agree, 100%.
Let's get into the next game real quick. We don't have much time left. Steelers defeated the Ravens 23-20. To me, huge upset.
Yeah.
Billy Batch and Jonathan Dwyer defeated the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, who'd have thunk this? I mean, you know, as soon as the word came down that Ben Roethlisberger wasn't in the game, I got to tell you, I mean, everybody was flocking over to Flacco. the Baltimore Ravens.
Well, you know,
Charlie Batch, really?
How many lives does Charlie Batch have in the NFL?
Yeah, he's like a cat, huh?
He's worse than a cat. He's like on his 17th life in the NFL right now.
Yeah.
And every time he comes in, he does something like this. You wonder why he really never got a nod to start anywhere else in the NFL.
You got to think that, you know, listen, this was a pivotal game for Baltimore.
Yeah.
I mean, think about
absolutely. It was huge for Baltimore to have this game.
Or not Baltimore, but Pittsburgh. Huge game for Pittsburgh.
Okay? 7-5 now, you know.
Exactly. Had they lost this game, they were dropping down to 6-6, and there is absolutely no conversation about them in the playoffs whatsoever. So, you know, listen.
Is Charlie Batch the savior in Pittsburgh?
Well, I was going to say, who gets the game ball here? You got to give it to Charlie Batch. Oh,
absolutely. No doubt about it. No question about it. Let's go to a terrible game of the day yesterday. Jets defeated the Cardinals 7-6. Jets are now 5-7 on the season. The Cardinals just started out hot. What were they, like 3-0 or 4-0 in the beginning of the year? They're 4-8 now.
Yeah, they were 4-0, and now what? They are 4-8.
Yes.
So they have dropped 8 in a row.
Yeah. But the big story coming out of yesterday is Mark Sanchez benched in the third quarter.
Yep.
Greg McElroy inserted because Tebow is inactive for yesterday's game.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, McElroy gets put in. He gets a little flicker 1 yard touchdown pass to Jason Cumberland, Jeff Cumberland, who you know what? Let me say it now: a blind man with no legs could have made that touchdown pass right there.
Okay.
You know, anybody in the NFL could have. But the emergence of the Jets team around Greg McElroy was what really got to me. Sean Green all of a sudden rattles off all these big rushing yards: 104 yesterday, Bilal Powell 58. You know, wide receivers all of a sudden look like they wanted to play. So,
yeah.
You know, to me, that really, you know, drove a lot home yesterday.
Well, okay. All right. Now, you're the Jets guy, so I'm turning to you. I think this is a very – you've got a number of different interesting side stories here. All right? First side story, you got Sanchez being benched. Second side story, you got the coach standing up there and saying, well, I just thought it was about time that he was. Third side story, where is Tebow in all of the mix? Fourth side story, you've got a fan base up there that is so similar to the Philadelphia fan base down here, it's not even funny. Everybody's going to jump on the McElroy bandwagon? Seriously?
People already jumping on it. It's despicable. But,
okay, where are you at with it?
I am a backer of Mark Sanchez. I think a lot of his flaws have to do with the team around him. And you saw what a Mark Sanchez could do in his first two seasons. To me, instead of building on that, the Jets downgraded. And with that, I put most of the blame on Mike Tannenbaum and a lot of the rest of the blame on a Rex Ryan. To me, instead of building the team to the strengths of a Mark Sanchez, they downgraded.
They lost a lot of character guys, a lot of quality guys, and they brought in a lot of trash like a Santonio Holmes and others. Mm-hmm. Great. You know what? McElroy, come in, be the savior, lead this Jets team to some wins, and become the starting quarterback. That's fine. I just think a lot of the hatred towards Mark Sanchez, I think, is wrong. I don't agree with it. To me, I think this is going to be even more of a media circus now because, you make this change now when Tebow's injured. Why didn't you make this last week or the week before?
Okay, let me ask you a question.
Because he was playing just as miserable that he did yesterday a couple of weeks ago when Tebow was healthy.
Right.
You know what I mean? So now you're going to hear about this, maybe the coaching staff doesn't like Tim Tebow. Maybe this was a personal vendetta against Tim Tebow to say, hey, we like our third-string quarterback more than we like our second-string quarterback.
Well, that's where my question is going to you. Is there anything to that? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Was it not the owner and the general manager that really wanted Tebow there?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So could there be where there's smoke, where there's fire, could there be something to that? That's my number one question to you. Why is Tebow not a part of this? Obviously, yeah, we know. All right, at least allegedly the word is right now we've got an injury situation. We've got a couple of broken ribs.
Yeah.
However, does Tebow play when he's healthy? That's number one. Number two, are we done seeing Mark Sanchez for the rest of the season? Your time. Go.
Listen, man, it's hard to say because of the love Rex Ryan has for Mark Sanchez. I'm not going to necessarily go out and say with what everybody else saying that this is Mark Sanchez's last hurrah. You're not going to see him for the rest of the year.
That didn't sound like love yesterday during that press conference, that post-game press conference.
Listen, then they got the picture of him, Mark Sanchez getting dressed with Rex Ryan's arm around him and now having their little lovey-dovey moment at the locker room. But still, I don't necessarily see that this is Mark Sanchez's last hurrah. Anything can happen next week. I still think that they're going to go into this week with Greg McElroy as the starting quarterback.
Okay.
From what they've seen yesterday, from what the fans are getting behind McElroy already, they're not going to say, okay, McElroy, you're back on the bench. Tebow's healthy. We're going to start Tebow. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen.
I don't think you can. He can't save face after everything that he just did in that post-game press conference yesterday.
Well,
he's got to help them.
Here. You know what? Let me say this. The Jets are doing Tim Tebow a favor because now at the season's end, you're going to hear all of this Jets spit in Tim Tebow's face. They didn't give him a chance. He's still a winning quarterback, and he's proven that in Denver, blah, 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 blah. There's going to be teams out there that are going to try to grab Tim Tebow and give him a starting position.
I was going to say, are we going to see him on a different team next year?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know what? You may see him on the Jacksonville Jaguars. You may even see him on an Arizona Cardinals. You're going to see a Tim Tebow on a team that needs a jump start at the quarterback position.
Okay.
And that's where you're going to see him.
As a Jets fan, how do you feel about the fact that potentially you might be looking at McElroy starting for the remaining four games?
Listen, it can't hurt right now.
Okay.
To me, the entire team is in shambles. I think there's a lot of players that need to be sitting, not just Mark Sanchez, but I'm not the coach. I'm not the general manager. I can only state my opinion on it. So,
are you going to see management changes at the Jets over the offseason?
You're going to see a lot of changes. There's going to be a lot of guys going bye-bye.
Okay. Are those going to be sufficient without actually discussing the coaching staff?
It's probably not. You know what, man? It honestly depends on who they bring in what positions.
Okay.
Listen, right now it's really tough to say because there's just so many problems within this Jets roster that where do you go to diagnose anything?
Yep.
You know, to me, I think Mike Tannenbaum, he really took the Jets and pushed them 10 paces backwards from where they were. You don't go from just two straight AFC championship games looking like you're going to do good in this third year to getting rid of so many key character guys and bringing in these guys who really weren't great teammates in other cities. Mm-hmm. Santonio Holmes, there was a reason why the Pittsburgh Steelers got rid of him for absolutely nothing, and other players. Sad to say. I don't agree with all the blame going on Mark Sanchez. He kept coming in and playing and fighting through everything and, keeping his mouth shut and, trying to do what he could do. Unfortunately, he's the quarterback of a big market team like the New York Jets. He's always going to get the blame. You know, this isn't hockey. This isn't basketball. This isn't baseball. In those sports, the coach is the first one to get the blame and go.
Yeah.
Not in football. Quarterback is the first one to get the blame. He's the first one that's going to be going, and it's sad to say, but I think
something's going to happen this offseason with Mark Sanchez, whether he goes down to a second string position and saves face and says, hey, listen, I'm a team first guy, which I think he is, or they're going to try to get rid of him in the offseason. Something's going to happen. So, but I think this week you're going to see Greg McElroy as the starting quarterback for the New York Jets.
Who are the Jets playing this week?
Not a good team.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you right now. Hold on 1 second. I'm trying to bring it up. I can't even remember. They're playing the Jaguars.
Okay. So, all right. Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, they're playing the Jaguars. You know, it's the Jaguars. I think, you know, Chad Henne loves playing against the Jets. He's got some nice weapons down there in Jacksonville. I honestly think you're going to see a Jets loss here. So.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting. We'll talk about it on Wednesday, obviously, because the lines will be out at that point. But, interesting. We'll be watching it.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? We definitely will. But listen, 4 minutes left in the show, Mike. Let's talk about this real quick. We got a couple minutes to talk about it. We mentioned it on Friday's show. Spurs were going to get fined for benching Duncan, Ginobili, and a couple other players.
Yep.
They did. $250,000 fine.
Yep.
To me, I think the NBA had no right to do this. Other people do. Mark Cuban, he says, he's fine with the fine. He goes, I respect the Spurs. I think Greg Popovich is the best coach in the league. I understand why he did it. And he goes, I might even take the fine myself if it was us. But he understands why the league did it.
That's nonsense.
But that the fine should have been higher because of the amount that was at stake was enormous.
Yeah, well,
because of the TV deals.
That's great for Cuban to say. You know, listen, I usually like the guy, but I mean, a comment like that is ludicrous. I mean, seriously. I am so...
Listen, I could see if the Heat blew out the Spurs by 60 points.
Exactly.
To me, that NBA would have had a better argument here, and Mark Cuban would have had a better argument with his statement, but it was an exciting game, and the Heat almost lost.
And even there, Jonathan, I'm going to tell you right now, I would still say the NBA doesn't have a leg to stand on.
Well, exactly. Listen, I thought it was wrong. I didn't agree with Stern coming in and doing this. I said it last week. Adam Silver can't take over the NBA soon enough. I think Stern is done. I don't like what he's been doing the last couple of seasons. It's time for Silva to take over. And this was a prime example of why the NBA needs to be under Adam Silver and not David Stern anymore.
Well, yeah, but, you know, the precedent, though, now has been set. So even with a new commissioner coming in, if they wanted to, they could point to that. Look, let's get it straight. Brett said it directly on Friday, and he's absolutely right. This is about marketing. This is about the fact this was a national game. This is all about the fact that, we're trying to put an image out there about our game, okay? That's all it was about. I've got sports talk show hosts down here in the Philadelphia area I was absolutely furious with on Friday for defending this.
Yeah.
Defending this nonsense. This is absolutely wrong, all right? And I'd love to call a couple of those sports talk show hosts out and have them call into me. Maybe we'll do that on Wednesday. But I'm telling you, one of them saying outright, listen, it's all about entertainment. No, it's not about entertainment. It's about sports, man. It's about winning a championship. And what Popovich did was he's protecting his team. He is preparing for the future.
Oh, yeah.
And for a commissioner to step in and say, I'm now going to dictate to you what your starting lineup is. That is just wrong.
Well, you know what? I've never seen Bud Selig step in and, find a team for, benching their favorite player one day because, you know what? We want to rest them for tomorrow's game.
No, but it's a very scary situation because now that we've got one league doing it, who's to say another league doesn't try it?
Oh, yeah. It'll happen. But anyway, Mike, unfortunately, we're out of time. We'll discuss this more on Wednesday because I think this
Absolutely.
Is a great topic for us to discuss. You know what? Thanks to all our listeners for listening today. It was a great show. Thank you for Russ Cohen for joining us. And we'll see everybody on Wednesday.
You got it.
Maybe you're a 49ers fan in Jacksonville or a Jets fan in Houston, and you're looking to connect with fellow fans from hundreds or thousands of miles away. Look no further than FanJunkies.net. FanJunkies.net is a social networking site dedicated to fans of every team and every league. Connect with baseball, football, basketball, and hockey fans from throughout the country and throughout the world. Get the latest news, take polls, and interact in live chats on game day. And best of all, it's absolutely free to join. Sign up today at FanJunkies.net. FanJunkies.net, where sports meets social networking.